Good evening and welcome to episode 14 of the Vegan Hour. And tonight I am joined by environmental scientist Gerard Bishop. Thank you for coming along tonight.
Thank you, Harry.
We are talking about the climate crisis tonight, but first, whilst people are coming online, let's just remind you that the Vegan Hour is sponsored by Vegan Frothers, cruelty-free clothing. You can buy your cruelty-free clothing and support animal sanctuaries at the same time, with 100% of the profits going to support animal charities, animal sanctuaries. And we're also sponsored by Sindian Natural Food Products, which you can get in supermarkets around Australia. Let's just have a quick look at what's coming up with events this week. Tomorrow night, yes, BKA Vegan in Burley has their bowling night, $12 bowls of amazing food from 5 p.m. You need to book for this because they get very, very busy. So make sure you book for that tomorrow night at BKA Vegan. And two events I want to mention coming up on Saturday. There is in Brisbane, Death Row Unchained Animal Sanctuary has what they call a Saturday session. And that will be from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Burbank in Brisbane. You can meet the animals, you can enjoy vegan food. I think there's gonna be some music there as well. So that'll be on this Saturday. And also this Saturday on the Gold Coast, my vegan life group, we're having a vegan luck in the park at the beautiful Cascade Gardens from 12 noon. Bring along some vegan food and join us then and meet some wonderful like-minded people. I can see lots of people have come online. Thank you very much, everyone that is watching. If you missed the beginning, I have environmental scientist Gerard Bishop with us tonight. We are going to be finding out all about the climate crisis. This is something that I've spoken about in the past, but now I've actually got an expert that knows what he's talking about. So it's a little bit different to me just sort of thinking I know what I'm talking about. Now, what we've actually called tonight is Appetite for Destruction. Was it Food Could Make or Break Our World?
Yeah.
Yes. So before we get into talking about the whole climate and environmental situation that we're in and what the how bad it might be and what can be done about it, let's find out a little bit about my guest tonight. So I'd like to find out a little bit about your credentials, who you are, why you became vegan. Just hit us with whatever you'd like to share and then we'll go from there.
Sure, okay. I have spent a long career with federal and state governments.
I am sorry to hear that. Sorry.
Actually, it's been a privilege. Lot by and large,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
Most of the people, at least the ones I've worked with, find it a privilege to work for government and to be true public servants.
Okay.
And
yes.
I've met very few bludgers in my time.
Wow, that's you must have been in the right department.
But for the last 15 years of that work,
yeah.
I worked with a group whose job it was, Queensland Government, whose job it was to map the tree clearing across Queensland,
right.
And the vegetation.
Right, yeah.
And it was rather frightening. We were the best resourced, had the best data in Australia. This group was at most about 20 people strong. We had the greatest satellite data. We had huge file stores. We used to wear out a four-wheel drive every year, traipsing across the countryside.
Okay, yeah.
By the way, don't buy used government four-wheel drives.
That's tonight's top tip.
My first day on my first trip in central Queensland, we dug our way out of black soil three times.
Wow.
But anyway, so
your job was to have a look at what was happening.
Yeah.
With tree clearing in particular, or what was the scope of what you were looking at?
That was the job, to map the vegetation, the baseline of the vegetation, and secondly, to map the tree clearing.
Okay.
And Queensland or Australia is unique because while it's a first world country,
yeah.
We have third world clearing going on. In fact, I just checked last week and the the area of clearing in Australia, in Queensland, is something, well, just over half of the area of clearing in the Amazon at the moment.
Wow.
That's not to say density, but definitely the area is staggering.
So it's that bad?
Yeah, we crawl all over the countryside. Each year, we map the clearing, and over that, we mapped it since the start of satellite data, which was the late 80s.
Okay.
So in that period, the average clearing rate for Queensland, this is average over all the years, was over 400,000 hectares per year.
Right.
Which is over 1,000 hectares per day. Which is,
well, was that 11?
About 11 square kilometres.
Okay, so has that been a constant, or that's increased in that time?
It's actually gone up and down.
It's gone up and down, okay.
There have been a couple of periods of panic clearing where government was about to introduce legislation.
Yeah.
But the clearing, on average, sorry, do I talk to the people?
Talk to me and talk to them.
I'm a bit of a loss because there's probably a lot more of
you're used to having an audience rather than a camera.
That's right. And if you, I hope you don't mind, I've got a presentation that I sometimes give.
And we hope to show you some graphs that are actually done by somebody who knows what they're doing. which is why I invited you right along tonight.
Yeah, so I might be referring to them and also pulling up a picture or two.
That's fine. So just to go back to what you're saying, so Queensland is clearing 11 square kilometres of land a day.
Yeah.
For what purpose?
Yeah, well, actually, just to give a bit of information about that.
Yeah.
It's most of it, 60% of it over the years, has been virgin bush, that is old growth forest, as they call it, or untouched, fully mature forest. So most of it is virgin bush.
Okay.
Yep. 40% of it is re-clearing of regrowth.
Yep.
And 93% of all of it
was
for grazing country.
Wow.
So
93%, almost the entire lot.
Yes.
Was for grazing, what, cattle primarily?
It works out to about 10 square kilometres a day, just for raising beef and some sheep.
Wow.
But to give you an idea of what that is, to picture it, if you can picture 2 kilometres wide by 5 kilometres long.
Yes, that's...
Every day.
Every day, cleared.
And the way they do it is really quite amazing. Tree clearing in Australia, the method they use was invented here.
Yeah.
It's now being used with great effect in the south of Brazil. But what they do is they get two of the biggest dozers you can get, D9s or bigger.
Yeah.
They drag a chain between them, and each link of the chain is about half a metre long.
You
cannot lift one link of this chain.
Wow.
It comes on several dozers, trucks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's sometimes weighted down with a big steel ball in the middle.
Oh.
And so these two bulldozers go flat chat forward about 100 metres apart, and the chain stretched between them, and whatever the chain meets, trees, everything, is flattened.
Wow.
And some of these trees you can't put your arms around, but they're just flattened by this irresistible force.
Yes.
And just to give you an idea of what that is, if you're anywhere near it, it's an utter racket.
Oh,
I mean, these two dozers going flat chat.
Yeah.
The smashes, the thuds, the creaks, the groans, the cracking of all the trees, and the wildlife going nuts, particularly the bird life.
Yes, I was about to ask you, what is the effect on the wildlife?
Oh, it's
horrendous.
It's devastating. Yeah.
It's just devastating.
What they do is they go flat chat with these dozers, and they cut out a swathe 100 metres long. They just keep going from dawn to dusk.
Yeah.
And what they do is they push that up into piles.
Right.
And burn it.
And burn it.
The alternative to that is leaving it as it is.
Yeah.
But you need to be on a horse to muster in that country, or helicopter. So they usually push it together and burn it.
So if I'm an animal, a bird, or whatever living in that area, and suddenly I wake up and hear this horrendous, or I'm already awake, hear this horrendous noise, and my home is just being destroyed, and I've got nowhere, got nowhere all of a sudden. And that's happening to what a large number of birds and other wildlife living.
Absolutely, the wildlife's being. Actually, this is a really important point. You can imagine if you ever see a new suburb spring up.
Yeah.
On the way from Brisbane to the Gold Coast to the western suburbs of Sydney.
Yeah.
You drive past it and it could be 2 kilometres by 5 kilometres.
Yes.
You know, and that you would say, oh, that's a big suburb.
And
that happens every day.
Every day.
So so when people talk about feral cats being responsible for biodiversity loss, it's not the cats, it's the cows.
Yes.
10 square kilometres of habitat trashed every day.
Every day. And this has been going on every day, for every month, for every year, for every decade.
For 30 years.
For 30 years. Just let that sink in for a second. And this, and we're just talking Queensland.
Yeah, that's Queensland.
And this is repeated through other states of Australia?
Well, Queensland's got the lion's share of clearing.
Yeah.
Three quarters or more of the clearing in Australia happens in Queensland.
Wow.
New South Wales is just waking up again. Their clearing's increasing.
Yeah.
Northern Territory is, there's a lot of new big properties up there, and they've decided that clearing is, but a lot of them are foreign owned. They want to develop. Western Australia is the same.
Wow.
But largely, the story of the beef industry is really interesting.
Yes, yeah. Just before we get into that, I'll address Matt says, g'day, Mr. Harry and Gerard. And love your work, Gerard. Thank you for spreading the truth. I saw you speak in Brisbane 2 years ago and it was great.
I think I met you, Matt. Yeah.
You probably did. Matt's a great bloke. So, okay. So, we were going to talk about the beef industry.
It's really interesting. The beef industry in Australia is the story of two beef industries.
Mm.
South of more or less the Queensland border.
Yeah.
You get, I was in, I'm a bit scattered, so please.
That's all right.
Please keep me on track.
No, that's all right.
I did some work for Beyond Zero Emissions a few years back. And co-authored their land use plan. And investigated a lot more, as well as my own experience in the bush. I looked at the rest of Australia as well.
Yeah.
And that was a real eye-opener. Most of Australia's beef is produced north of the Queensland border.
Really?
It's mostly the Bos Indicus, the Brahman style of cattle.
Yeah.
They're tough. Yeah. They can eat the tropical, subtropical grasses and survive.
Right.
They're more resistant to ticks, they're more resistant to diseases. South of that border, about 30% of Australia's beef cattle are mostly the Bos Taurus, the standard, the standard cattle that you think of when you think beef cattle.
Yep. And they're less, and they need a softer grass or something, do
they? They need more nutritious grass. They're not tough enough to survive the rigors of the rangelands. But most of the cattle north of the border is exported, and it's exported as what they call industrial beef, because it's not the desirable cuts of meat. It's minced and is sold in 20 kilo and 60 kilo blocks as industrial beef. It goes to hamburgers, and it's cheap.
Excuse me whilst I vomit. Just the thought of it is just unbelievable, isn't it?
So it's the tale of two industries.
Yeah.
In the north, where most of the beef is, and most of it's exported, by the way, you get large cattle properties. You get mostly corporate-owned. Very few family-owned properties again.
Right. Okay.
In fact, you can tell the difference. There's an effect called the fence line effect.
Oh.
You drive past a family-owned property.
Right.
It mightn't be so big.
Yes.
You get to the fence line.
Yeah.
And it's knee-high grass in the family farm, and it's flogged. Not a blade of grass on the corporate side, and it's all about maximising profits. So what they do is they flog the land. Maximum carrying capacity.
Right. Yeah.
They usually own several properties spread across different climate zones.
Right.
So if there's no rainfall in one area, they get drought assistance from the government to pay for the diesel to truck them up to their other properties that might have a bit of grass.
Yeah.
So, you know, the beef industry is, if you look at where most of the beef is produced, it's in the north, and most of it is corporate, and most of it is industrial beef. But those are the areas that are actually doing the worst to the soil and flogging the country. And
yeah.
Later I might talk about the Barrier Reef if we have time.
But, yeah, that's,
but
yes.
That's one of the big killers.
Well, that is, wow, it's scary. I'm already scared. I want to get to some comments here. Where we got, Jerry says, Gerard is so right. Clearance of trees in Queensland is third world standard. It is frightening. John says, Gerard, hi, just a question. Do you believe land clearing is causing more loss of biodiversity and environmental damage than climate change? Good question. As a second part, I understand that men with chainsaws and starting fires is what is actually destroying the Amazon basin, not climate change. This is done for cattle ranching and soy production to feed animals in feedlots. I do understand that the tree clearing affects climate change as well. What's your response on that? That's a big question.
It's disastrous. It's like you say, and worse. Globally, the hotspots of tree clearing are happening in the tropics,
right.
Where most of the biodiversity is.
Yep.
The Amazon, Brazil, been the world's leader in clearing. If you look at a map of the world, Brazil's the standout leader. It's got huge forests in the tropics
and
so-called productive agricultural land. So why wouldn't it be a target for clearing?
Yes.
But for a couple of years, Brazil lost its crown to Indonesia.
Oh.
And that was about 3 years ago.
Right.
And for the reason that most people quote for that is that it's for palm oil.
Ah, yes.
Production.
Yes.
And just to mention it very briefly, palm oil, there's been a study, even though Indonesia is really hard to map because it's covered by cloud all the time, so you can't get satellite data. But they have done a study of 5% of the clearing and found that 20-odd% is for palm oil, 20-odd% is for grazing, and the other 60% is for bits and pieces.
Yeah.
So. And as well, of course, palm oil, what they get after they expel the oil, the rest is actual dairy food feed, dairy cattle feed. So 15% of their income is actual livestock feed anyway. But getting back to Brazil, Brazil's the leader again.
Yeah.
And where they're doing most of the deforestation is in the Amazon. And because the tropical forests have poor soils generally, strangely enough.
That's surprising, yes.
Yes, they can't grow crops, so what do? Yeah. They graze it.
Right.
Okay, let's dispel a myth here. This is really interesting.
Yeah.
How to kill a forest.
Ooh.
It's really hard. Forests are really tough buggers. You can't kill them by logging. If you log a forest, even if you clear fell the forest, if you left it alone,
it would be
a forest again within 10, 20 years.
Okay.
It's a mature forest again.
Wow.
So what do? You burn, baby, burn. NASA have a really good website. Check it out on the web. They have 10-day composite images of fire, global fire patterns.
Right.
And you can see that our world is burning. And it's burning because we put the torch to it.
Wow.
We burn these lands to, first of all, to stop the forest growth, and then also in Africa mainly to make sure that the old dead pasture is burned off and the new green pick can come through for the cattle.
Right.
So anyway, the other one thing I wanted to say about deforestation is that it's now global. One country that is a standout for reforestation is China. China have done more than any other country reforesting their own land because they did such a good job of deforesting it. However, they're doing great guns in the last 20 or so years of reforesting.
Wow.
However, China is the world's biggest importer of food grain for their pigs. They have a huge population of pigs. And where does that come from? Brazil. In fact, the south of Brazil, an area called the Cerrado, where it's similar to Australia, and that's where they're using the two dozers and the chain method to strip that and create acre upon acre of soybeans and corn, maize.
That could be used to feed starving children instead of...
Absolutely.
Instead of the animal agriculture.
Yeah. So China have exported its deforestation. It's global now. Every trade in agricultural commodities is a trade in deforestation and in water, which we might get to later if we have time.
Yeah, I think we're going to need more time than an hour. I can see there's lots of comments coming up there too. Let me just see. Ashok says, Matt says, yes, you did meet him and it was great to. Ashok says, so much land clearing is being done in Queensland, mostly for cattle grazing. Yeah, 93%, as you've said, for cattle grazing. And public is unaware about it. Thanks, Gerard, for throwing light, and Harry for broadcasting it. And John says, the government doesn't pay for drought relief. We do.
Yes, exactly. Of course, it's taxpayers.
We all pay. Luba says, it is so sad that Australians do not save trees. I see myself with every day so many trees cut and animals lose their homes.
Yeah, it is.
And I mean, it happens, we see it, if we want to talk locally here on the Gold Coast, you know, we see it with clearing land for a housing estate or something like that. So it's not for animal agriculture. But again, what it's doing to the animals, you know, we're talking in, especially locally, we're talking koalas, you know, losing their homes and that, and of course other animals that are living in the bush there, you know. So, and that's so sad. I see a lot of it where I live. I live in an acreage area, and I've seen the effect over decades of the clearing, and it's bringing animals out of the bush onto the road. They're getting hit and killed. You know, it's happening more often now, and it's really quite noticeable. So it's another way that we're just ruining things. You know. Okay, we're caught up with the comments there. So
we hope to turn that around. We hope to reforest our planet. The World Preservation Foundation, the mob I volunteer for, is just embarking on a trillion tree campaign.
A trillion trees
to go with the other two. Trillion tree campaigns.
What are the other two trillion trees? Is that China one of them?
China's planted maybe 100 million trees.
Wow.
Which is only in a bucket. It's tiny.
It sounds a lot, but it's tiny compared to a trillion.
Let's give a bit of perspective here. Our world, our globe.
Yeah.
How do we use it?
Yeah.
If you look at all the land area in on the planet, forget the oceans, and then take and look at the bits that we use. That is, you take away the ice and the snow, you take away the deserts, you take away the water. You take away what's left of the forest. Most of it's degraded, but let's put that aside for the moment.
Okay.
What we're left with is the human occupied land, human utilized land.
Yep.
Okay. Of that land, I've actually got a graph. It's called land use here.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's fascinating.
Which one is it?
Here we go. Land use.
There we go. Okay. Is that it?
No. Land use. Here we go.
There we go.
Human occupied global land use.
Let's see if I can get this up so you can see this. Hang on. I want to get both cameras. Yeah. Okay. So what's the red?
So, well, let's start with a little bit. The little blue bit is all of the cities.
The little blue bit is right over here.
It's all of the transport, it's all of the roads, it's all of the railways, it's all of the mining. It's all that looks like built up areas, all the cities.
Right.
The green is the crops.
Green over here, folks.
And you can see that basically half of that is crops for food, for humans. And about a quarter is crops for biofuel, and about a third is crops for livestock.
Okay.
And the big red bit.
Yeah, the big red bit.
Is actually 3/4 of the human used planet.
Yeah.
Is devoted to grazing.
Wow.
So let's explore that a bit.
Yeah.
So what do we get out of that land? If this were your island,
yes,
our island,
yeah.
You know, how do we use our little island? If we put 3/4 of it aside to grow, and it's food for the grazing animals, for the cows, for the sheep, and the goats.
Yep.
What do we get from that? We get red meat and dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Some dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Some dairy is actually lot fed.
Mm.
But the grass-fed dairy and the cattle, so we get red meat and we get some dairy.
Mm-hmm.
So this land, 3/4 of the human-used planet, is suitable for regrowing as forest.
Mm.
Now, there's a study done by Salish Rao. He's a guy who started up Planet Healers.
Yeah.
He did a study about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He looked at how we can use this land, and he looked at that areas that were definitely forested in the past.
Yeah.
And he found that if we just reforested 41% of that, we would draw down 27 years of emissions.
Wow.
So we can roll back the clock on climate by decades.
Wow.
Just by repurposing, rewilding this land.
So you're talking about, when you say 41%, reforesting 41% of the land that's used now for animal grazing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. And that would bring back, 27 years?
It was drawdown
27 years.
The growing trees would soak up 27 years of carbon dioxide emissions.
Wow.
So
here's
the huge lesson for humanity. If we want, and there's a lot of other crises that we may or may not get to.
Yeah.
But the big lesson for humanity is, if we can forego red meat and dairy, we can save our planet.
Mm.
That gives us 3 decades to go electric vehicles, to stop burning fossil fuels.
Yes.
It's not like, I mean, the latest IPCC report says that we've got 12 years,
12
basically.
12 years,
some people are saying less than that.
Yes.
Because none of the IPCC models factor in non-linear change. And we've already started to hit tipping points, which are not modeled, which are not catered for.
Okay.
So we're in dire straits without hitting tipping points,
and
we're in worse straits if we didn't.
And just to, you know, with the IPCC's report, which came out last year, the one you were referring to, and it says, you know, we've got 12 years, what are they saying happens if we don't make a change? And that we get to the end of that 12 years, what's going to happen then?
Well,
what's the projection?
Everyone was so excited after Paris. They were all patting themselves on the back, saying we've done a great deal for the world. You know, we're going to limit warming to 1.5, maximum 2 degrees. Well, the fact is that the countries who made those promises, very, very few of them have put their money where their mouth is.
Exactly.
So what we're facing now, by 2050, we're facing 3 to 4 degrees of warming.
Wow.
And that's projected to be hothouse Earth, and there's science papers on this now.
Yeah.
It's not some radical view.
Yeah.
It's mainstream science.
Hothouse Earth.
Hothouse Earth.
That doesn't sound pleasant.
No. It will mean an uncivilized society.
Yes.
Society will break down, basically.
Right, okay. The conditions will be so extreme, it'll be almost unlivable, is it?
Yeah.
And we will be sort of competing with each other, fighting with each other, whatever, to try and survive.
Yes.
Right. This sounds like a doomsday sort of scenario. It's like one of those many movies they brought out where you sort of project into the future and society started to get really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And the problem is that those fictional movies, we're actually looking at the possibility of that as the realistic possibility.
Yes.
Wow.
And for those who believe in parallel realities,
yes,
that could be one that happens quick smart. I, however, believe that we humans are slow, but we're not stupid. And we will come to our senses. The guy I just mentioned before, Salish Rao, he's a PhD who did a lot of work in the early internet days. He's the guy who invented fast Ethernet.
I thought the name was familiar.
Yes. Very smart guy.
Yeah.
He's graphed a few things. And he's graphed rise in CO2 levels.
Yes.
He's graphed rise in meat consumption.
Right.
He's graphed rise in deforestation rates.
Right.
And a number of other things.
Yeah.
And they are all exponential graphs.
Yes.
He's also
recently
started graphing the rise in veganism. He's another one that he's graphed is the rise in species loss, so extinctions, and it's also exponential. And he actually these graphs all overlap and all reach the same point where the Earth becomes unlivable and species are dying. You know, we've killed the planet, basically.
Yes.
And he says that will be as early as 2026.
What? Jeez.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Did you hear that? 2026. That's 7 years away.
Yes. But because these graphs are exponential, the year before, 2025, we'll only see half of the biodiversity loss, half of the critical infrastructure, water use, etc.
And then
the following year it'll be really rapid.
Wow.
But I guess the silver lining in his work is that
by
2026, the projection on the number of vegans in the world also goes exponential, and reaches 100%. But by 2025, half the world will be vegan.
Wow.
So this is fascinating stuff.
This is fascinating, yes.
And what it means is that in the next few years we are bound to see some really scary stuff.
Yeah.
But we're slow, but we're not stupid.
Right.
I believe that more and more people will see that if we repurpose this red bit, if we grow trees, the silver lining is that the critters that I used to think of cows as beautiful, you know, the big brown eyes, but now I see them as methane factories, four-legged methane factories.
They're still beautiful.
those are the critters that inhabit this big red bit.
Yeah.
So if we stop breeding them and eliminate them, methane, of course, is gone within 10 years or so. So that gives us also a stop switch for the climate. It also gives us, if we can cut out those methane emissions from cattle and sheep, it immediately flips the climate back and gives us extra breathing space.
Okay. Would that lull us into a false sense of security or whatever the term is?
No, I hope not.
Because
I think we're going to hit the wall before we decide to grow some ears and to change our diet.
There is in a positive. I mean, the thought that occurred to me there when you're sharing this doomsday scenario, which is very realistic, and it's I'm not discrediting it at all. But what I did pick up on was that the increase in vegans, which is fantastic, and also the that is also translating to the alternatives. So that a meat eater doesn't have to keep eating meat. There is a vegan alternative that he can't tell the difference of.
That is
not going to be destructive for his health or for the environment or for the animals.
Yes.
So part of that increase in people being vegan might be sort of people that are accidental vegans in a way, you know, that have just sort of transitioned to that, not because of a hardcore ethical or moral reason, but because it just works easily that way as well, you know, for them. So,
and that's a really interesting point because if the writing's on the wall, if it's obvious what's happening, people will change. In fact, people are changing already. The trends in veganism is amazing.
It is, isn't it? You've been vegan 6 years and you've seen massive change in that time, right?
And before that, veggie for 20 years.
Wow, okay.
I can see what's happening. But my mob, the World Preservation Foundation, they're linked in with some rather influential people and they can see the money is following the trends. JBS, the biggest beef producer in the world, JBS has just started investing in alternative meats and cultured meats.
Yep.
Well, look at what happened with the Beyond Meat.
I was just thinking that, they floated on the stock exchange, amazing results. Yeah. But any industry that projects ahead that is wise enough to look at what the trend is and what's sustainable, any smart industry would be getting into vegan alternatives and would just be putting all their investment into let's get away from the environmentally destructive animal industry and let's get into the sustainable industries that will help the health of the planet and ourselves and not be killing animals. Any smart industry would be looking at that. If you're in an industry and a food industry and you're not looking at that, then you really are just missing what's happening, because I can tell you there's a lot of being involved in food industries myself. There are a lot of industries that are projecting forward and they're just shifting their whole ethos of their business and going, this, we're going in a new direction now. This is it. We're shifting, And so that is happening more and more. And before we went live tonight, one of the things we were talking about was, and I'll bring it up now, was that you've been connected with or writing for James Cameron's, it's a book, isn't it? Or is it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's called Eating Our Way to Extinction.
Yes.
Which is due to come out next year.
Yes, that's right. It's a documentary.
It's not a book, it's a documentary.
Sorry,
it's a film.
There's a series of things.
Okay.
The documentary is the main game.
Right.
And James Cameron is executive producer. And Kate Winslet is the voice of Mother Earth.
Excellent. Excellent.
But
okay.
There's a book about environmental aspects, about health aspects. There's websites. There's going to be cookbooks. There's going to be meal planners. There's going to be all manner of assistance for people. I mean, James Cameron is putting so much behind many
different areas,
consciousness raising activities,
fully vegan schools.
Yeah.
Through to just, many different things.
Yeah.
But what I found interesting is you were saying that when you started writing for, was it a year ago, you were writing a chapter on the environmental side of things, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right.
And you initially, at that stage, this is basically explaining how much things have changed just in a year, because initially, you were sort of saying, is it too late sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Will we ever get there?
So a year ago, that was how you were seeing where things were at, right? Now, in present time, you're looking at it. And you're going, like, the future's looking brighter, basically.
Yeah.
So just in the last year, you've been able to look at how things have changed so much. So that's encouraging, because when we talk about something as serious as climate crisis, it's very easy to get bogged down or to get depressed or heavily, affected by the same sort of things that affect us when we think about the way animals are treated, and we can come out of it thinking, a strong sense of despair, is there no hope, sort of thing. So it's wonderful to be able to be aware of how bad things are so that we can focus on what it needs to be to lift us out of that. So if we're stuck in mud and we can't get out, instead of complaining about being stuck in the mud, we look for the way to get out. So that is encouraging.
It's very encouraging. I've just been gobsmacked, basically,
By people like Greta Thunberg, who's come along and just
Isn't she amazing?
Just incredible, you know, to have someone so young, so inspiring, so just getting out there and really getting people to take notice.
Yes.
I mean, people like that, you know, stand a chance of, you know, making a massive change that we need.
Yeah, it gives me great hope for the future.
Yes.
I mean, I've got two sons and five grandchildren.
Wow.
and these kids are smart, and they're moral. They've got a conscience. They know what's right and wrong. And that gives me such hope for the future.
It is encouraging, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many young people that are switched on now, and I've got to give some credit to the fact that they are not receiving the lie from mainstream media. They're actually receiving the behind the scenes information through social media, and they're actually going, whoa, you know, they're seeing the truth a bit more than say a few generations ago that just sat in front of the idiot box and got fed, just got brainwashed all the crap. You know, a lot of the youth now are like, no, we're actually seeing beyond that. So that's really encouraging. Did you want to continue on? Or?
No.
I wanted to ask you a question. Are we really seeing the sixth mass extinction on Earth?
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. I mean, climate is just one of the crises that we're facing at the moment.
Yeah.
The other is the most concerning to science is biodiversity loss. And it's really scary. What we've done is we've replaced wildlife with livestock, basically, on the planet.
Yeah.
If you look at mammals, just 4% of the mammals on Earth are wildlife.
Okay. Wow.
The other 96% is one, livestock, and two, humans.
Okay. Wow.
So we've grown exponentially over this planet, and we've really
done our best to ruin it. Definitely, yes.
60% of the wildlife now is gone. 80 to 90% of the edible fish are gone.
Wow.
70% of our fish now comes from fish farms because the oceans have been so trashed.
Wow.
In England now, it's illegal to buy cod because that was one of the richest fisheries on Earth was the cod banks across the Atlantic.
Right.
And it was almost limitless. Fish and chips.
Fish and chips.
In England was cod, always was. And now as I say, you can't get cod because it's been fished out, it's gone. That fishery is gone. Mm. This is what we're doing, we're trashing the planet.
Yes.
I got a few graphs, mate.
Yes,
Can I show these things?
Yes, please do, While you're looking for them, I've got a question there from John. He just says, I just hope they can make meat substitutes that are GMO free and free from other chemicals. Yeah, good point. I would much prefer these meat substitutes to be made from whole foods that are free of chemicals, herbicides, fungicides, as these chemicals also destroy biodiversity, bees, insects, and soil microbes. Yes, good point. I thoroughly agree with that. Meat substitutes need to be as whole food as possible because we're just creating another problem if we get into sort of foods that are chemical laden, and as you've said there, John, you know, that's just, it's just another issue that would come up. So what have you got for us there?
Look, food's such a big thing for the future.
Let's get that in. I can see it says that 83% of wild mammals are gone.
Yep.
58% of wildlife is gone. 50% of plants are gone. 50% of fish are gone. And that is that. That's how humans have changed biomass.
Yeah.
And that was that. It says there 2015 and 2018. So that, and
this is recent stuff.
This is recent stuff. Yeah.
And 70% of the birds on the planet now. Chooks.
Oh, 70% of chickens, only 30% are wild in the birds.
Yeah.
And 60%, or as you were saying earlier, of all the mammals on Earth, 96% are livestock and humans, only 4% are wild mammals.
Yeah.
So actually, break that down of that 96%, 60% of the mammals are livestock and 36% are humans and 4% are wild mammals.
So can I just diverge a little bit?
Yes, please.
And come
please.
Back to this
yes,
issue
please.
Of food, because what, and it directly relates to the question about, you know, what collateral damage do we do when we farm things? It's a really interesting point, because what we've done is, by creating chemical nitrogen fertilizer, which was a major breakthrough, it literally sucked nitrogen out of the air and made it into reactive nitrogen that grows plants. Now, nitrogen on the first level equals protein.
Right.
So if you see a plant with dark green, good looking leaves, it's full of protein. Yeah. Animals know this, that's what they go for, that's right. what they eat.
So when you say it's full of protein, it's nitrogen rich.
Nitrogen
right.
rich,
okay.
exactly
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So the story of nitrogen is really interesting. We've now, with nitrogen fertilizer, we create as much reactive nitrogen as the whole of nature creates in reactive nitrogen. So we have fueled the plant growth on the planet two times.
Wow.
And what that's done effectively is double the carrying capacity of the Earth. It's through us producing all that nitrogen, we can now support all these livestock, all these people.
Right, yes.
And as well as what's left of the wildlife.
Yes, yeah.
But the thing is that this green revolution, the thing that's been hailed as the wonderful thing that's fed the world, has also trashed the planet. We've lost half the world's soil. We spray on, we kill insects galore.
Yeah,
Our use of herbicide is unbelievable. So what's being recognized now is that to create a wholesome food to feed ourselves for the future, we've got to get away. We can't keep farming the way we were. We've got to move to what they're calling agroecological farming now. It's not as extreme as organic because they use outside inputs when necessary.
Right.
But it's a way of farming that it's cover cropping, and it's forest, food forests, and we've got to radically change how we farm the earth. So this is going to impact all of life on Earth. And if we can bring biodiversity back into our farming, that will also save the biodiversity loss there.
Okay, wow. That is a big subject in itself, that one.
Yeah.
And I probably got 50% of that.
Suffice it to say that right now we're in the midst of the sixth great extinction. And the ecologists who write these science papers are talking in terms that you would never read about in science papers. It's almost alarmist.
That's actually an interesting that you've said that, because that is something that I noticed, that in publications where normally the language would be neutral.
Yeah, exactly.
it is, as you say, alarmist. It's strong language, and I'm like, really? This is,
I've got a few points here. The first one is, agriculture is the greatest driver of species loss.
Yeah.
And meat is the biggest threat
to
wildlife.
Yeah.
So but also, it's not feral cats.
It's not feral cats. That's an interesting point. But also, I'll bring up there, you also mentioned there, 80% of agricultural land is devoted to livestock and feed.
Yeah, 80%. Isn't that amazing?
It's just, it's incredible.
If you look at the grain crops, just the grain crops alone, the wheat and so on, about 30-something percent of that is fed to animals and the rest goes to humans.
Mm.
But if you look at all crops, including the oil crops, most of which go to feed to animals, and the fodder crops, roughly half, 48% of all crops feed animals, not humans.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a study done in the States, and this is similar to Australia.
Yeah.
If an American turns vegan, they decrease their land needs by 88%.
Wow.
In other words, if you're vegan, you can grow enough food to support yourself on just 12% of the land that's now needed for a,
wow,
normal.
That is a massive reduction.
Yes.
And it answers a question I wanted to ask you is, can one person make a difference? And
yes,
obviously, in that massive reduction, that's just one person making that difference. You know,
yeah,
that's there's a question there from Ashok that I wanted to get to as well. He says, "Hi, Gerard. My major concern is future generations may not be left with enough oxygen to breathe the way that we are destroying our planet." That's an interesting question.
It is, yeah.
Would that relate back to what we're talking about with nitrogen and that, or is that taking us in a different direction?
Yeah, slightly different. Basically, trees give us... I heard a child the other day say that trees are our breath solidified, and it's true. We breathe out CO2,
yeah,
they breathe it in,
yeah,
they breathe out,
yeah,
oxygen,
yeah,
we breathe it in.
Yeah.
So we are the trees, and,
yeah,
the trees are us. In fact, it is really, really close. Biodiversity, the web of life, is such that we can't live without them. And if we endanger just one species, it might be the red-throated finch that you'd never heard of.
Right.
But, yep, each species has its place.
Yes.
And if by destroying one,
yes,
species, or not even destroying all of them, if there's a few,
yep,
left in a zoo somewhere, we say they're not extinct, but they basically are.
Yeah, yeah.
We've destroyed that web.
Yeah.
That we...
That interconnectedness.
We suffer from eventually.
Yes.
So,
yeah,
the web of life, the biodiversity loss, the biodiversity crisis,
yeah,
can be best addressed,
yeah,
by diet. And to answer, yeah, what you're saying,
yeah,
what can one person do?
Yeah.
By choosing a plant-based diet, it's the best thing you can do for biodiversity, that is, other species. It's the best thing you can do for climate. As we saw, you've got all that land for growing trees, plus you're not having the methane that's the big heater for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's the best you can do for future water use, because as,
yes,
we saw, half the crops,
yes,
go to livestock, not people.
Yes.
Plus they need to drink.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
it's nitrogen pollution. The Europeans found that we need to cut down meat consumption by 50% just to clean up the rivers of nitrogen pollution.
Yes.
You see nitrogen pollution, you see, yes, the algal blooms.
Yes.
And then it flushes out to sea.
Yeah.
And you see, I've got photos here, but what happens, it goes out to sea, and,
yeah,
when that nitrogen,
yeah,
hits the oceans, the algae say, "You're beauty." If there's enough phosphorus, they go mad.
Yeah.
And it causes these massive outbreaks,
yeah,
of algae.
Yeah.
And what happens is they rise to the surface and they just and they die,
yeah,
and they sink to the bottom. As they're doing that decomposition process,
yeah,
sucks all the oxygen out of the water. So we've now got 300 to 400 dead zones, mostly off the mouths of things like the Mississippi River, the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow.
It also happens all around the world. 300 to 400 dead zones, and now the oceans are starting to be depleted of oxygen. So,
wow.
So, you know, this is a crisis that no one saw coming, but it's nitrogen and it's protein and it's too much of the stuff.
Wow.
And the best thing you can do is plant-based diet.
Wow.
So there's water in there. There's a few other things.
Yeah. It's Colleen says that we were talking, she mentions permaculture and food forests, which is what you were talking about with a different way of farming. And
yes,
plant farming, not
totally
farming.
Agree.
And
we've got to up the productivity, but we're getting there.
And Colleen also says she would love to see these stats. Would love to see them in a book. The statistics you were talking about.
Oh yeah, you'll be able to see them in a book. And,
yes,
it's much more readable than me because I wrote it.
When is it due for release?
It's called Eating Our Way to Extinction.
Eating Our Way to Extinction. Yeah.
That's the name of the documentary. The name of the book may actually change because it's a little negative, but it's connected with the Eating Our Way to Extinction,
yeah,
doco, and it's due out in January.
Okay. And you've written a chapter on the environmental.
I've written
yeah,
11 chapters.
11 chapters. Okay.
On environmental aspects.
Wow. Colleen says, this info is core to our evidence for veganism. Will it be covered in the documentary?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent.
Or if not in the documentary, if there's not enough time, read the book.
But January is still a bit of a distance away. I'm thinking, is some of this information available on the World Preservation website?
Look, what I can do is I can give you this, send you this presentation for sharing.
Great. That would be much appreciated. Yes.
I think that's okay.
That's something that I can share onto social media.
Yeah. So you can all get a copy of it. Look, everything here, everything that I've talked about, it's not conjecture. It's not opinion. It's science based, and it's hard literature. Most of it is peer reviewed science literature. Where I couldn't get information, it's government, United Nations and government literature, and where I couldn't get that, it's institutions, such as the Netherlands Environmental Assessment Agency. They're the ones who've said,
what is it?
A no meat diet is the most effective to stop species loss.
Yeah.
So, and other things like that. Wow. There's a bit of grey literature, but mostly it's peer-reviewed. So none of this is controversial in any way. It's just science. So all of the references are given in the. I'll give you the full presentation.
Okay. Great.
And in the comments
at
the bottom will be the full reference to all of that.
Fantastic. I love that there is the science to back that up, because there's always people that are going to come from another angle and say, no, this isn't the case or whatever, and they need that credibility there, So if there's something in black and white, that really, really helps, I think. Let's see, was another comment? Yes, Colleen says, perfect. Thank you.
That's great.
we've covered quite a lot of ground tonight, and the time has gone really quickly. We're nearly at the end of the hour. And I think we covered a lot of the questions that I wanted to ask you there as well. And I think what I've gotten out of this is that, we're in a very, tricky times, aren't we? We're in tricky times, but there is hope.
Yes, exactly right.
And I think people like yourself, mate, spreading the message, creating awareness and so forth is really, really important. Mm. If people wanted to get in touch with you, you're not on social media as such. You're a very smart man. but if they wanted to get in touch with you, is there an easy way? Can they contact you through the World Preservation Society or something? Or
Through them or through you.
Through me, yes.
You're welcome.
In fact, I have linked, I haven't linked it here, but I will link it, the World Preservation Society's Facebook page. That wouldn't come back to you though, would it, probably?
Any inquiry there will get back to me.
It will get back to you. Excellent. Okay, so I can link that after the live stream. And let me just see if there's any more comments there. Right, there's laughing comments from Colleen. I must have said something funny. First time this year. No, it's not. So I think we'll start winding up the show now, and I want to thank you so much.
It's been
so much for creating awareness on this very, very important topic, because we're basically been shitting in our nest, and we've got to do something about it.
Yeah.
And so I think we're leaving with a sense of hope that we can do something about it, and that we just need to look at how deep the shit is that we're in and how big a shovel we need.
Yeah. There's great hope, I believe. And people, whoever's vegan watching this, it's just the start. Don't think of yourself as anything special. You're just the first ones. Mm. Because basically, within a generation, everyone will be.
Mm. So there used to be a thing that said vegan world by 2020. Right, that was going back a few years ago. Well, 2020 is next year, so maybe it'll be vegan world by 2025 or 2026. Let's go for that. We'll have to restart that one. Okay, so I want to thank everyone that's been watching and asking questions tonight. There's been a lot of input. I really appreciate it. And as per usual, you can ask questions on this live stream after it's finished if you're watching it later. And also, we will be on YouTube in a day's time. This episode will be on YouTube, and I want to mention, looking forward, in 2 weeks' time, for episode 15 on Tuesday, August the 6th, I have Pip Coogan from My Green Collective. So we're going to be talking about all wonderful vegan foods. That's something that Harry loves talking about. So thanks again, Gerard. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks everyone for watching. Remember to live vegan. There we are. Live vegan and save lives. Hey, yeah, he hasn't practiced it either. Look at that. Who said an environmental scientist couldn't do that? So thanks again, and I'll see you in 2 weeks' time on the Vegan Hour. Good night, everyone.
Thanks for watching.